Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Academy Award winner J.K. Simmons stars in the new MGM Plus original series, The Westies.
There it is, Javits Center.
Biggest construction project in the history of New York falls into the lap of the Irish.
This Irish crime gang built New York City on blood, sweat, and loyalty. Their legend is true.
The Italians outnumber us about 100 to 1.
Their story is criminal.
This Irish guy's threatening war.
He's gotta go.
Keep out of Hell's Kitchen.
The Westies. Watch now. Only on MGM Plus.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age!
You want a cup of joe with you?
I'm gonna make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk.
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do.
I'm the Joker, baby.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Bars, episode 121 of season 2. Jeff D. Lowe, Gooch, and Ken Jack. It is the Mission Impossible episode. Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, part 1. Very excited to talk about this movie. I have now seen it twice. Was hoping to see it a third time. However, ended up seeing a couple other things as well. But I've seen it twice. I'm excited to talk about it. Maybe some theories, maybe some other potential thoughts about what could be happening going forward. I don't know. There's a lot to talk about with this movie, and I got a lot more in my second go in terms of like breaking it down, because the first time I saw it, just a fucking amazing experience. So we'll talk about that in a second. We'll do that review, and then some movie news as well. But exciting time. The week is finally here. It's Barbie and Oppenheimer week, or Oppenheimer and Barbie week, depending on who you are. What do you say, Ken Jack? Yeah. Is it Barbie and Oppenheimer week? Do you go alphabetical or do you go Oppenheimer Barbie?
I think Barbenheimer just has a cooler ring to it than Oppen Barbie sounds or whatever that would be.
Oppenheimer.
Did you see the break? Yeah, and how about the breaking news from Deadline this morning?
Oh, no. What was it? I don't even think I saw.
I want to note that they used a picture of Cillian Murphy.
Oh, okay.
Say it again? No, they used a picture of Cillian Murphy. But it's Deadline Hollywood said today, Oppenheimer stifled petition from atomic scientists begging U.S. government to not drop the bomb, per report.
Why would Cillian Murphy do that?
Business Insider is reporting that Oppenheimer persuaded Edward Teller, one of the Manhattan Project scientists, not to send along the petition. Oppenheimer talked me out of it, saying that we as scientists have no business to meddle in political pressure of that kind. Breaking news. The quote tweets are pretty funny. It's people from all sides being like, why are they reporting this like it's breaking news? Like what?
Yeah, this is what about 70-year-old news, like or over 70-year-old news at this point. Like, what are we talking about, dude?
I was so confused. I saw it right when I woke up, and I'm like, hold on a sec. I thought it was maybe some like immersive movie. Like I thought it was like sort of Cloverfield type thing. I'm like, should I log on to Oppenheimer.com right now? Or like, what are we? And they used the picture of Cillian Murphy. So I was like, hold on. Like they didn't use actual like Oppenheimer. I was like, what the fuck are we? What am I reading here?
They should post like an article, or we should make a fake article after the movie comes out. And it's just like, you may have loved Gary Oldman as Harry S. Truman, but did you know that he dropped 2 nuclear bombs on Japan?
It's like, what the f- I can't, I am very excited for how many people are going to walk out of that movie. And like there, it's a very small number. Many people know the atomic bomb thing that happened, World War II, it happened. But you know, like every screening has what, like 1 or 2 people who are not going to know it's a real thing. Like, wait a second.
Oh yeah.
Are you?
Wait, we nuked someone? What?
That was scary movie. Imagine if that happened. Like,
yeah, that would have been fucking crazy, dude.
You know, the 2 people that we saw Death of Stalin with are going in just very nervous. They're like, oh, I hope this isn't a comedy.
Yeah.
Why is Oppenheimer so Irish sounding? What, Cillian Murphy does his native accent? Like, it's all just a gag in the trailers they've shown us. They've dubbed it over, but once you get to the real movie, he just sounds like he's in the Peaky Blinders again.
By the way, We haven't seen it. I know you guys talked about reviews reaction. Reactions came out last week. Reactions actually came out in the middle of Tuesday night screenings or viewings for Mission Impossible. The reactions are very interesting. I think for the three of us, that's what we wanted to see for reviews, right? Like that. But I'm
what we
really
expected to.
Right. Yeah. Right. Like I think all three of us are going to like it. I do think that mainstream audiences are maybe not going to love the movie. Like there's a lot of buzzwords, and I said last week, there's a lot of buzzwords in those reviews that you're
always.
Like, anytime you see the word dense.
Yeah. Like then you know you're fucked for yeah. a main audience.
So I'm really curious to see, and I don't think that means it's not going to perform well. Like it's going to perform well. Tenet performed well during the height of the pandemic. So it's going to do well. He has his audience, but I'm really curious to see what like the general audiences think of Oppenheimer. It's going to be very interesting.
I do like how Nolan just seemingly can't catch much of a break between Tenet dropping in COVID and now this dropping in the middle of the now actor strike. Plus right. writer strike, just very funny.
Right?
Yeah, it's very funny timing for him. But I mean, I don't think that's going to affect much of the. I don't think anyone's in the main audience that would have seen Oppenheimer anyways. Like, hey, I'm not going to go see this. Sorry, I'm staying with the actors. I'm not going to go watch Oppenheimer.
Tom Cruise said he was going to probably see Oppenheimer on Friday night and then Barbie on Saturday. He was asked on the carpet and I thought he's going to give like a political answer. Like, I'll see both, but he was like, he said maybe he go see Oppenheimer first and then maybe like cleanse with Barbie afterwards, like a lighter movie. Yeah, we'll see. I'm very excited to see it. Also for the, we've gotten a lot of tweets, all three of us and the podcast, what to see it in. Correct me if I'm wrong, prioritize 70mm over everything.
Yep. Number one overall pick right there.
Right. And the chances of you living by a 70mm IMAX theater, by the way, are pretty low.
Slim to none, basically.
There are I'll read it off. 70mm IMAX.
There's 14 in the United States and then 6 in the rest of the world, I think is the number. So
here is, yeah. I'll just read it now. AMC Metreon in San Francisco. So San Francisco, you can see it. Universal City, City Walk in Hollywood, the Chinese Theater IMAX in Hollywood. That's like a very rare, weird screen. I don't know exactly how that works. California also has Regal, Edwards, Ontario, and Irvine Spectrum as well. New York has Lincoln Square IMAX. I don't know about Chicago, but boys, and I'm gonna pull up the full list, but.
So one in Indianapolis.
If you're in Tempe, Arizona, Harkins. California has, I think, the most, has like 6. So Irvine, Ontario, Hollywood, L.A., San Francisco has one. Sacramento has one, Esquire IMAX. Florida has one in Fort Lauderdale. Georgia has one in Buford, Georgia. Congratulations, Regal Mall of Georgia yeah. IMAX. Indianapolis has one at the IMAX Theater, Indiana State Museum. Any IMAX at a museum, by the way, sometimes no food, no concessions. That's tough. Michigan, one in Detroit, Chrysler IMAX, one in Grand Rapids as well. AMC Lincoln Square in New York, the only one. King of Prussia Mall, biggest mall in the country, I guess by retail space.
Cool mall.
Sorry to Mall of America. Pennsylvania, right outside of Philadelphia, you have it. Rhode Island, Providence. San Antonio and Dallas have it. AMC in San Antonio, Cinemark in Dallas, nothing in Austin. Tennessee has Regal Opry Mills. Nashville. That's it for the U.S. That's the only places you can see 70mm IMAX. However, 70mm you can find in a lot of places. So prioritize 70mm over regular, just plain non-70mm IMAX. That's what the suggestion would be. That's how it was intended to be seen for Christopher Nolan. So keep that in mind. Do not, unless you're one of those places I just saw, also just Google it. IMAX has our website. If you really want to see like the true format, go see it in 70mm, even if it's not IMAX. Don't see it in just regular IMAX if it's not 70mm, if you want to do what Nolan would want you to do. So there's your answer.
By the way, this is just like maybe something to think about for the next time anyone makes a big movie like this. Consider the fact, before you make the movie, that there's only like 20 of these theaters in the world. So maybe next time, if you're a big budget movie maker, maybe make them optimized for whatever the most widespread theater experience yeah. is versus the one where you can only go if you're in one of like 6 cities in the country, including big Buford, Georgia. Shout out to the Checkers.
You can't get the picture of the big reel. There's nothing better than seeing that big reel, the 11-mile-long reel.
Cool. I love it. It's awesome, but I just hate the fact that like there's so many people that like are just not going to be able to see the Nolan's optimized experiences, and like either you need to find a way to get that to other people or reverse the, you know, it's got to be a way. It's got to be a way to do this where
run. By the way, if you can see an IMAX though, run to see an IMAX 70 millimeter.
Yes,
the 70 millimeter because it is like I saw a TikTok in a reel, but it's like it's movie like visuals on crack. Like it's a whole other. Like 70 millimeter is amazing already, and it's a big leap from every other way you can see it. But like 70 millimeter IMAX is a whole other universe.
Sitting opening night. By the way, I've been checking in on it. It sold out first 2 weeks at the Lincoln Square one. So no surprises there. Like literally every showing is filled, every seat. I'm going opening night. My seat's right in the middle of that IMAX theater, which if you guys know, it's not like where you walk past five people to get to the middle, like in the Dolby seats, and you can kind of get out to the bathrooms. I'm really worried. I might have to bring a pee bottle.
Bring your diaper. Bring your diaper.
I'm not getting up there at this movie. I might miss the 15 minutes of back shots.
That's just nightmare.
That's why I say Robbie Fox calls it our season tickets. We sit in the same seat, but I'm not because I'm actually going to be in New York for Oppenheimer. I'm going to be in New York. I'm going to see that Monday, and my seats are ass. I'm like three rows up from the front. They're not great, but I'm going to see it in the format. So
we did. So we saw what do you call it? Venom 2 in those same exact environment, and it wasn't terrible. Like the movie was terrible, but the experience wasn't terrible. Was terrible, but the movie quality experience was good.
Seeing Siren break out of the prison.
What
a moment.
The smelliest theater you can imagine in your entire life was that Venom 2 screening. It was just like 50 dudes in Cookie Monster pajama pants, just pure BO. And then there was one dude, which we always talk about, that was like, hey, did you guys hear that Andrew Serkis is here? Like, what the fuck are you talking about, man? It was just nothing but Venom shirts and Deadpool hats and Cookie Monster pajamas. And just that smelled.
If you see in one of those large screens, 70 millimeter IMAX, they're all typically kind of the same like shape theater wise. And I'll use Lincoln Square for example, but I know a lot of them are like that. Where if you're the front row, which is usually below the railing, I think some of the seats are more for handicap, but there are regular. That seat kind of sucks ass. I saw Interstellar in that. It's tough. But if you go like the second row up, it's a pretty like it's like an 8 foot jump up with like the stairs and everything. So it is a significant difference. And the front row, the second and third row really aren't that bad. So you can get away with it if you go find it in the 70 millimeter. It's a massive theater. But
I still can't believe Link is booked out for 2 weeks. It's almost as if it's like a magical experience to see a movie like that in the big format. But it is what it is.
It's not. Yeah, I don't go to movies anymore. I watch them on my old my iPhone 3.
My crusty iPod.
Where the slots guy comes in.
Yeah. Well, slots. Casino. Poker.
That's the magic of movies. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He puts in that again. If you've ever watched a bootleg movie, the best is when you see the casino guy, but then he puts in like the boy said, he puts in real strawberries at one point.
Yeah. He puts in, like, actual. And then money shoots out every time. He's making a real smoothie, but it makes money. He's amazing.
This episode of Lights, Camera, Barstool is brought to you by BetterHelp. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. BetterHelp, we've talked about it many times in this podcast, is not just a great way to seek help, to talk to somebody, just to maybe get something off your chest, but it's a very convenient, easy way to do it. Sometime in life, we're faced with, you know, those tough choices. Maybe we got to do something. Maybe we have to make a decision. Maybe we have to go somewhere. And you need someone to talk to those things through. You need someone to bounce some things off of. And it's not always great to go to a significant other or a friend. A professional is very helpful in those situations, whether it's extreme or not extreme. Decisions around career, relationships, anything else, therapy helps you stay connected. Helps you navigate things in life that maybe you can't do on your own. Because guess what? Most things you can't do on your own. And BetterHelp is a great way to do it because guess what? You don't got to go to somebody. You don't got to look at somebody, chat. You can do all that stuff. And it's easy. And it's affordable. And it's simple. And it's a simple way to get help when you need it. If you're thinking of starting therapy, maybe you're scared about going somewhere or talking to someone, this is a great solution. Give BetterHelp a try. Entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time, no charge. They're not things you can get by the old brick and mortar. I say brick and mortar as if it's like a store called therapy, but you get what I'm saying. Let therapy be your roadmap for whatever it is. BetterHelp. We've been using BetterHelp for a long time. BetterHelp.com/lights. Get 10% off your first month. BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, help.com/lights. All right, let's get into some movie news here. We'll talk about things we've watched, things we've seen recently. Castings, though, for the DCU Superman Legacy movie. Isabel Merced, who used to be Isabel Monet, I believe, by... Mm-hmm. Like her stage name. She played, she was in Sicario.
Dora.
Right?
She's Dora. She's
Dora. Dora. Okay, Dora, sure. Instead, family.
Yeah. She's playing Hawk Girl. Anthony Carrigan is playing Metamorpho, fresh off of a Emmy nomination. I don't know how to say it. Edie Gathegi, is how you say it? Playing Mr. Terrific.
That feels wrong. No matter what way we're pronouncing or getting wrong, yeah. That felt extra wrong.
If I got one of the two names right, that's impressive. And then Nathan Fillion is apparently going to play a Green Lantern, which he's in all of James Gunn's stuff. And he can't be the main Green Lantern. Like that just can't be the case.
That's not going to be the case.
He's playing Guy Gardner, which is like universally agreed upon as the worst Green Lantern, which I'm sure James Gunn will play into that. Mm-hmm. He's got a bowl cut.
Anthony Carrigan is the one that I think has me most excited. He's super funny.
I've never seen him in. Yeah. It's Eddie Gathegi.
Yeah. It's not Edie or?
Edie, yeah. Anything? Eddie would have felt disgustingly wrong, but it's actually very correct. Eddie Gathegi.
Eddie Gathegi.
Our new employee. Yeah, he's playing Mr. Terrific. So there you go. I pronounced your name right. I apologize on the first one. But yeah. Okay. Interesting castings.
Yeah.
Hawk Girl should have been played by Hillary Clinton, in my opinion, but that's another debate for another time. Metamorpho.
I was going to say, Anthony Carrigan does feel, if you don't know who that is, that's NoHo Hank from Barry. He feels extremely like a James Gunn actor.
Yes, very much so. Super funny.
Yeah. Outside of that, though, I can't expect any of these characters will... Because he also had a quote this week where he was like, none of our movies will be setting up. Like, we won't ever be setting up future movies in the current movies outside of like the tentpole character.
I feel like the more I look at this casting, and more it feels like to me, like he's making almost like another Suicide Squad-y thing where it's like, here's a bunch of characters I'm going to throw into this. By the way, a lot of them are going to die, or they're not going to play a big part, or they're going to do this, which is good in this case, for sure, because we don't want the movie to be diluted away from the focus of Superman and Lois. So I don't know. Interested. Very interested.
Which, talking about soups, I watched the first three episodes of the My Adventures with Superman. On, I guess it's on Cartoon Network. You would like it. It's an anime.
It sounds like a porno,
anime Superman. It's pretty good. It's like a throwback take on the character. Mm. Yeah. But yeah, a little bit.
What was the Family Guy bit where it's like he meets like Superman in hell next to Hitler, and Superman's like, "Yeah, I killed a hooker because she said I was faster than a speeding bullet," or something like that. I think about that every now and then.
Jesus.
Evil Superman.
James Gunn also last week promoting Blue Beetle with a pretty emotional.
No. He was addressing that it is a movie that exists.
With a pretty emotional tweet. The Reyes family just got its first superhero. # Blue Beetle, only in theaters.
Blue Beetle is a movie coming out under the DC banner.
Pretty fucking Blue Beetle. Go see Blue Beetle, but also like if you don't, yeah.
Yeah.
That's fine. Like,
he fresh off calling The Flash one of the greatest superhero movies ever made, and he promotes the hell out of like almost all the DC stuff. He just gives a Magic Johnson tweet for
Blue. To be fair, he did the same thing to Shazam 2. Shazam 2, his promotion of it was very similar. It was just like, Shazam 2 is coming out. That is a movie that we are promoting today. And it's like there was no genuine praise for that movie, similar to with Blue Beetle now.
I'm hopeful for Blue Beetle. I think it has a good shot at making like $150, $250 at the box office. It's not going to make any money.
Blue Beetle was Paul McCartney right around 1980. 1981, maybe. I forget what the exact year was. That was
after John died for you, Gooch.
Yes.
Well, Paul was also dead. So,
Paul McCartney?
No, I'm just playing. I'm playing into Beatles myth and lore.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I'm into the for sure.
The replaced Paul McCartney theory.
I forgot he got rebooted.
People may not know this.
Paul McCartney got rebooted.
Rebud is what we're looking for here.
Outshine is the number one frozen fruit bar brand in America. And once you try them, it's easy to see why. Their fruit bars and mini fruit pops are made with real fruit or fruit juice using simple ingredients you can pronounce. That means no high fructose corn syrup and no artificial colors or flavors. Outshine bars are gluten-free and even a good source of vitamin C. And the flavor lineup? It's stacked. We're talking strawberry, mango, coconut, watermelon, pineapple, cherry, you name it, there's something for whatever you're craving. You've got classic fruit bars, mini fruit pops, and fruit blends that swirl multiple flavors together. Think pina colada, cherry limeade, and more. Find your new favorite refreshing snack, Outshine, at retailers nationwide.
Trailer came out today for Gareth Edwards, the creator. Gareth Edwards, Cloverfield fame, Rogue One-ish fame. He did direct Rogue One, but Rogue One was a very interesting movie. There's basically two movies that were made. Amid a future war between the human race and the forces of artificial intelligence, Joshua, played by John David Washington, a hardened ex-special forces agent grieving the disappearance of his wife, is recruited to hunt down and kill the creator, the elusive architect of advanced AI who has developed a mysterious weapon with the power to end the war and mankind itself. I will note, I am looking forward to this. However, I have to note from the trailer, if you've not seen it, the weapon is a kid. And it just continues Hollywood's obsession with a fucking kid being the answer to everything. It's always a kid.
Children are the future.
John David Washington, Gemma Chan, Ken Watanabe, which is awesome. Anytime he's in it, you know there's going to be some fucking crazy. Allison Janney, which feels very like – this just feels very weird, not Allison right? Janney.
She ever done a sci-fi film?
Yeah. Like, Sturgill Simpson's in the movie.
Hell yeah.
Pretty awesome.
He's been doing a lot of acting lately, and he's always good.
Did you ever watch his last album when it released? They did that Netflix anime, like release with it.
I definitely see that.
Oh, it's sick. It's like a 45-minute long anime movie, but the soundtrack just plays in the background the whole time. It's pretty cool.
It's just him staring at like a giant pair of like school teacher titties.
No, he's not. Like he's not in it at all.
That's even better then.
One of my favorite songs ever. That was the last song Trill picked on the podcast, All Around You. Simpson. Not a friend of the pod, but he's awesome.
Yeah, I thought this was kind of awesome. I know the kid thing is always going to be a little bit of a hesitation, but like Gareth Edwards, he's a dude that comes from the VFX world. And I feel like that's so present when you watch Rogue One and when you watch like even Godzilla. Like the effects in both of those movies hold up better than a lot of the stuff that comes out now. That like level of CGI visual storytelling is so lost now because it's just like a given that you're going to have some sort of level of CGI, and it always kind of sucks. And I feel like he's one of the few good guys that really puts a lot of care into it, along with like Neil Blomkamp and other dudes like that. So that's what I got out of this. I watched the trailer and I'm like, this is Terminator combined with like iRobot combined with like all these other sort of sci-fi projects that I love, but it's also like its own original IP in its own way. And I'm pumped. I love an original sci-fi property. I'm very, very excited to see this.
Yeah, it looks amazing. Really, I don't want the kid thing. The kid thing, it's more of me just, I can't believe it's always a fucking kid. It looks awesome. Not just the idea of it, the story looks cool, but it does look great. The model work on Rogue One is still mind-blowing to this day. It just looked so fucking good.
The shot when the fucking Star Destroyer comes out of the shadow, like, it's so cool.
This looks cool, though. I'm excited for this.
Yeah, all you cunts in our Instagram comment section that always, the no original movies, nothing original. Fucking go see this movie, please.
Yeah.
Like it's a big original blockbuster. You have, even if you're not that interested in this, it is something where if you give studios a reason to keep making original blockbusters, they will. If no one goes to see this, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, no, see, we told you. Can't take risk on shit like this. They're not going to keep doing it. Like, so I think this looks great. This director has a proven track record. John David Washington, jury's still out on him, in my opinion, but he does look like a better fit here. I think it looks great, to be honest. But yeah, go support this movie. We need more original shit.
I'm so sick and tired of hearing people say that there are no good original movies. There's no movies. There's movies are all bad now. They used to be so much better. Movies were better back then. There are tons of great movies. I quote tweeted something the other day and I said the same exact thing. I said, yes, there are more movies these days. Like, not by like, there's not like 300 more a year than there used to be in the 90s, but there are more movies with more places they're premiering all over the place. So yes, there are going to be quite a few bad movies. Yes, there are a lot of superhero movies, though that's always a bit exaggerated. Like, there's what, like 15 come out in a year, maybe max. Like, it's not like it's 15 superhero movies a week. Like, there are remakes, there are sequels, but there are so many original awesome movies that come out every year. To say there are no good movies anymore is such a stupid, ignorant take. If you can't find a good movie, you're not searching for it. Yeah, maybe not all of them are wide released right away, but there are tons of good movies that come out all the time. And while I'm sure, yes, you can blame Hollywood for not marking some of them, if you want to find a good movie, you can find a fucking good movie. There are plenty of good movies that still come out. And this one, hopefully, is one of them.
It's mostly just people like telling on themselves, which, by the way, that's something we didn't address with the creator, is that, okay, listen – Asian woman and a black guy, this is getting too woke for my taste. This movie has gone full woke. No way it becomes good. A child, that kid wasn't white. This is woke garbage, dude. No way. That was my other favorite. And that was, you quoted that yesterday, that fucking dude.
It's woke stuff.
These movies are woke, dude. The woke movies. It's the most instant virtual like dunce cap that has ever existed. It's like once you describe a movie as like, oh, this is too woke, or the Hollywood's bad because it's gone woke, you are the biggest moron on earth. It is
too woke for me.
You told right now, if you told Warner Brothers, like, hey, if you make a movie that is 2 hours of a white guy saying ethnic slurs and it will make $1 billion, they will make 500 of those movies. They would not give
set up
a
universe.
They would set up the literal cinematic universe of it. It does not, it's all about the money. It does not fucking woke.
They're
losers,
like,
dude.
It's like, yes, there are plenty of movies that make have a political statement or make a statement or say something, but there are plenty of movies that don't as well. Again, if it's the ultimate tell on yourself, if you can't find good movies, you are just not searching for them. There are plenty of great movies that come out. Are they harder to find maybe than they were in 1990s? Like, does every movie get a wide release? No, but you can eventually find that movie. It will hit you in one way or the other, whether it's in a theater or at home. You can find good movies every – like, it's a crazy opinion that they don't make good movies anymore. It's insane.
Ken Jack, one that I got that for this weekend, I put up my tweet for, like, Joyride. I was like, yeah, Joyride, great, like, which is a movie in theaters right now. It's like a girls' trip comedy.
Very funny.
Someone responded to me. Saw yesterday.
Yeah, and someone was like, four Asian girls, I'm sure it's great. Yeah, and I'm like, if you watch this movie, it's as like, cause I know people would love this movie, the people who would criticize it, cause it's so throwback to early 2000s raunch humor. Like, it pushes the edge and the boundary so hard at points. By the way, if you're looking for a good comedy, it misses in a few spots, but it was very funny.
There's so many of these people that just like, you have to have the most miserable brain to input information that way. You know what I mean? Ugh. Like, to look at any sort of movie that's coming out and just the first thing you're looking for is that sort of shit. You have the most miserable, repugnant brain in the entire world. Just losers, dude.
I double feature. I saw that and I saw Sound of Freedom.
Hell yeah, brother.
Joyride and Sound of Freedom. Sound of Freedom is a perfectly fine thriller.
Good movie.
Really fucked up topic, but everything around that movie, like, discourse wise is just somebody came
misery.
And somebody did come over to me and pooped in my drink, though. That was kind of crazy. I didn't expect that to happen.
The liberals got you.
They fucking got you, man.
Sound of Freedom's not great, but it gets a little bland, but like the subject matter's obviously very intense and very much a real problem. Sound of Freedom is like, I don't know.
Just the discourse is unbearable.
I honestly like it's a movie worth seeing. Like, and I actually think the discourse being so hammered political charge that it's taking away from like a pretty well made movie. Like, it's nothing great. It's not anything like Oscar worthy, but like, it's not like I expect it to be just complete dog shit. But then it's so, yeah, whatever. It's not worth
the way the discourse revolved around it, because I hadn't heard about it before that whole start. I assumed it was going to be like one of those like Chrissy Metz, Christian Stuck in the Ice movies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's not. It's just a regular movie.
It's a regular ass, pretty well made movie. It gets maybe a little bland and it's like a little cookie cutter, but like it's really solidly made. Yeah, right. I thought it was going to be like a Kirk Cameron Saves Christmas type thing.
Exactly.
It isn't, though. Yeah. But that's like, it's weird. Making a lot of money.
Chrissy Metz Stuck in the Ice movie was so fucking bad. Do you remember that? It was her and like Mike Coulter and.
Wait. It wasn't her stuck in the ice.
No. Okay. We found a new species buried in the ice.
Her kid falls in the ice. Yeah.
Yeah, her kid, I think, falls in the ice and survives because of prayer or something like that. It was real bad. It was a bad movie. Like
yeah.
And that company is weird. I remember the one that makes that, I think it's run by a pair of brothers that just like pump out all
Didn't
these,
they
like,
make
really
the Kurt Warner
movies.
Movie too?
I think so. Yeah. They make a lot of weird movies.
What else? Oh my God. I can't remember. I'll talk about this movie next. This is the stupidest. This is like, if you ever wanted to like double confirm that this movie just didn't get it and like it needs to go away, The Flash will be the first new release movie to debut on the NFT blockchain.
I don't even know what these words mean.
Not fucking
like it's
topical.
Not even like whatever. It's like not a big deal. It's like whatever. Cool. Like great. Like debut it and do whatever you want with it and distribute your movie however you want. But it's just so funny that of all movies, it's The Flash. Like it's this like just wacky, ridiculous movie that they've been trying to make for 15 years and every problem under the sun. It's like okay.
I can't wait 10 years for the behind the scenes documentary on The Flash. Like every decision that's gone into that, it's been the wrong decision at every turn. It's truly impressive.
Have you ever watched the behind the scenes for The Social Network, by the way?
I don't think so.
It's on YouTube. It's free on YouTube. It's unbelievable to us. So I showed Social Network to someone who'd never seen it before the other day and obviously loved it. It's, by the way, breaking news. I've now officially bumped The Social Network up to 100 out of 100. It's a perfect movie. It joins my pantheon. But it is watching David Fincher move extras around that set is fascinating. He like here's literally someone who's on set and he's like, you're in the shot, your shoulder a little bit, and he just moves this person slowly just out of frame for the whole shot. Like they're just like there's like awkward like sitting there like in between the camera, not trying to get in the way because he just like this one little speck of a human ruins his like. And I mean that's just why he's David Fincher. He's unbelievable. But it's I would highly suggest watching. We don't get enough of those like true A to Z behind the scenes movie documentaries like we used to. It used to always be in the special features on a DVD. This is like a classic.
It'd be Ben Affleck drunk off his ass yelling about Michael Bay.
Listen, if they released the behind the scenes, like a real behind the scenes on The Flash, and if it was an NF, I'd figure out the NF. I'd figure that out.
I would want, you know what I want though? I don't want it to be from The Flash. I want like a documentary, and a third party documentary. Just fucking that one just escaped me.
Disgusting.
That was a bad one. That just escaped mid sentence. I tried to suppress it, it just came straight out. a third party documentary about the marketing of The Flash would be, I would be very interested in that.
It's like it was all planned. Ezra Miller's crime spree was actually
– yes.
We planned this. David Zaslav was like, actually, what you're going to do is you're going to break into homes in Vermont.
And then Hawaii and then fucking Montana.
It's going to be great. And then we're going to release it as an NFT. You get the NFT. You get the whole experience. You buy this NFT, Ezra Miller will show up to your house.
It's going to be released as a Dropbox link where it's every frame of the movie is a JPEG.
Yes.
In a zip like folder.
In a full resolution. It's like a 2 terabyte folder.
The one with the babies.
Marvel news. This is just not even news. Just kind of like, it was like a little – I don't know if it was like a graphic or something that got put out there or if it was news and that made the graphic. But budgets revealed for Secret Invasion and She-Hulk in the movies. Wakanda Forever, $250 million, which that includes. Yeah. Keep in mind, these budgets include COVID a lot of movies budgetary impacted by COVID. Mission Impossible is one of the movies that was majorly impacted by COVID. Wakanda Forever definitely impacted also by the death of Chadwick Boseman. $250 million. Makes sense. Ant-Man 3, a lot of rewrites, same, $200 million. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, $250 million. I've been in production for a while. She-Hulk, $225 million.
For a sitcom.
There is a lot of CG work in there, so I'm not excusing it. I'm just saying, if you sat here and you read me the numbers and convinced me, I'd be like, okay, I get it. Which I guess there's a lot of work because there's scrolls. Secret Invasion, though, costing $212 million, really blew me away.
It's a scam. I mean, it's a money laundering scheme.
The production value of Secret Invasion is solid. Like, it's not Secret Invasion, cool show. Like, I've liked the twist. I've liked what we've seen so far. If you're an MCU fan, I think you will enjoy it. I think it's one of the better ones. Nothing crazy, though. Like, nothing mind-blowing. Like, I think WandaVision and Loki are head and shoulders by everything else because it felt very unique and different and felt like you had to see it. I think this is cool, and there's definitely, if you want to keep up with the MCU, you're going to have to watch Secret Invasion or at least know what happens. But for She-Hulk and Secret Invasion to cost $400 million, which just comes in the back of Bob Iger saying they're going to scale back everything. He's like, it's been diluted. Like, he wants to make it basically, we're like, you need to see these things. Like, you need to see it. You got to make an appointment to see it. And right now, that's not the case with Marvel and Star Wars to an extent. Though if they pull back Star Wars anymore, they're just never going to make Star Wars again. It's like every month, it's like they're pulling back Star Wars. Like, well, we're not getting anything now. So I don't really know, like, what more you can pull back on Star Wars movies. But that's crazy.
I think with Secret Invasion, it's frustrating in my head because, like, that should be the one series you have which should not be dependent on CGI and money and stuff like that. It's espionage. It's espionage. You have very few superpowers, although I guess that's been kind of changing. And, like, you should be able to just do this without having to spend a bunch of money on showing us a scroll chain. Do it off camera. Save yourself fucking $2 million, apparently, per scroll face change. And, like, that is frustrating enough on its own. But also for the She-Hulk thing, yes, if you were going to make this show, which requires you to show Tatiana Maslany, right, with in changing and in full She-Hulk face, CGI and all that stuff, fine, then it would cost that much. But then it raises the question, at what point were you thinking, oh, maybe we just don't make this?
Yes.
Because if we just sit there and go like, oh, if it's going to cost us this much and we're going to have to spend this much showing a CGI face all the time, maybe it's not worth burning $200 million in on his fucking streaming sitcom. A streaming sitcom of a character nobody's really, like, dying to see. And you get to say the same thing about Secret Invasion. No one's dying to see that. Unless you have, like, a property that people have been begging for forever. Like, why would you spend that level of money? Especially with Secret Invasion, when it doesn't feel like you have to.
I mean, and it goes back to – I made this point last year. It was like, or maybe earlier this year, like, a lot of these series are just, they would work better as specials. Like, bring them down to 50 minutes to an hour and a half and release it that way. We don't need 5 hours of She-Hulk. We don't need, like, 5 hours of She-Hulk. I can't tell you what happened outside of that one episode, which I barely remember still, the one with Daredevil. It's something that just, if you brought down the time and the run times of this stuff, like, there goes 80% of the budget. I mean, I don't know. And it's also frustrating when they say you don't have money to pay writers and then you're spending $225 million on She-Hulk. That's insanity.
I saw a funny quote where it was like, the reason these cost so much is because it's very difficult for a producer to steal $1 million from a $13 million budget. Like, yeah, now it makes more sense when you're spending fucking $200 million a pop on these. And somebody at Disney, there is an executive there just fucking buying a new yacht every year. Based off these things. There has to be a money laundering scheme. There's no other way.
That is a good segue into the next thing. Bob Iger obviously under some fire for comments after the whole...
rightfully so. Bozo PR move.
Yeah, it's a bozo comment about, like, actors and all the writer's strike. But Iger made a pretty modest $195 million compared to David Zaslav, which in the last 5 years made $498 million.
What the fuck? That's
crazy. Ari Emanuel, $346 million, which $345 are just royalties from Entourage for being based on him. Reed Hastings, $209 million. Ted Sarantis, $190 million. $92 million.
Can't pay him, man.
The Zaslav one is
former
true.
CEO Bob Chapek of Disney made $400.
Yeah. He got like an RSU, a single RSU. It was fucking loser.
Warner Brothers is like, we're in billions of dollars of debt. Why don't we give our CEO $500 million? What?
Yeah, just to rename HBO Max's streaming service for the 50th time and then just completely cancel like 5-6 movies, their shows.
He also figured out there are such things as girl shows and guy shows. Don't forget that.
And he made the 90 Day Fiancé cinematic universe. Fucking bozo. And he had to get like some of the biggest minds in cinema to call him and say, stop being a fucking idiot. Like that is what you're paying him for. To embarrass your fucking network. Like, oh, it's just a goddamn shame, dude. Goddamn shame.
David Zaslav.
You think Roger Goodell's looking at that like, what the fuck?
Yeah, no,
people,
right?
People always bitch about Roger Goodell's like $30 million annual salary. He's like, what the fuck? I barely make half. I don't even make a quarter.
He's a commissioner of the most watched thing in the country by far.
Yeah. That is also like a non, like, isn't NFL like it's still a nonprofit? Like, he should be making way more based on this. I'm fucking crazy.
Oh my God. All right. Well, that's, I guess, news. Anything else we're watching here? I mean, we mentioned Joyride, mentioned Sound of Freedom. The Covenant has some people have talked about a little bit here and there. I know we mentioned in the podcast very briefly. But the Covenant with Jake Gyllenhaal from Guy Ritchie, I think that's worth a watch. Definitely, they didn't market it whatsoever.
It came out at a rough time alongside that Gerard Butler movie, which is the exact same thing.
Kandahar.
What else? Everybody's watched it. By the way, apparently they cloned Tyrone coming up on Netflix is pretty good. They've gotten a lot of good reviews.
Yeah, I'm excited for
that.
They
cloned Tyrone. Going to be in theaters and Netflix. Everyone's watching Suits, by the way. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I saw Brandon Walker was watching it.
I'm in a group chat with Brandon Walker, Will Compton, and Rico, just talking Suits. It's all we talk is Suits. I've seen Suits. I've referenced Suits in podcasts for years now, like very just briefly. Because when I moved to New York, my two roommates, I live in their fucking couch. They watch Suits. So that's like how I was introduced to Suits. I'm rewatching Suits. I mean, Suits is fine. It's like the number one show on Netflix right now, though. It's crazy. Know.
It's bumped every. I would have watched that show so much earlier, like most USA Network shows. I would have watched it if I didn't think the two dudes looked too similar. Like every single time I would see the ad for it, I'm like, these two main dudes look like the same guy, but they're not. And I don't like that. Something about my visual monkey brain is just like, I can't get around that. Plus, obviously, the fact that we saw that one dude doing a, what do you call it? What was the ad? What do you do the ad for, like the cookie?
Royal Match?
Yeah,
Royal
guy, Match, who plays, yeah. Guy who plays Royal Match. Yeah, Louis Litt, that's the character. The funny thing is, though, is that
– Louis Litt?
First of all, that's the Meghan Markle show. So Meghan Markle's in that show.
Yeah.
But Harvey, the main character, he basically talks in movie references. Like that's his lingo. So it's, I guess if you like that.
I can't wait for people to get to like season 4 and realize that the show just completely loses steam.
It really falls off.
My name is Louis C. Litt. That's what everyone calls me.
Great intro song. Greenback Boogie.
It's also very New York. If you live in New York, you like that show 10 times more. I guarantee it. It's just a very New York, like, hey, hot dogs on the street. Like it's just like, it recycled shots of the World Trade Center being built. That's basically what that show is. Anything else we're watching?
Rex Gemstones has been crushing it, by the way. Gemstones is still one of the best shows running.
Big episode of One Piece coming up. Maybe the biggest one ever. So you guys have time to catch up. August 6th is the big episode.
Yeah, only 1,000 episodes to go for us to catch up on that. I saw The Outlaws. It was a Netflix original movie. It's not good. Adam Levine one. It was in Pierce Brosnan and a couple other people. Wasn't very good, but I thought it would be way worse.
Adam Devine?
Devine, yeah.
like, hold the phone for a second here. Yeah,
hold the payphone for a second. You wanted to give that a fucking applause at first.
I don't know what it is. Maybe because it's, I don't know, maybe I need like a few more weeks, but... I can't get myself to watch Quarterback on Netflix.
Oh. I watched the first episode only because I'm scrolling to the Patrick Mahomes parts to find the where he plays the Chargers, and then I move past everything else. Like that's what I did the first two episodes, and they just didn't show it. So now I'm just not going to watch.
I just like, I don't know. Like I'm excited. I'm excited for football big time, but like, I don't, maybe it's just like too early. Like, I think maybe it's like a thing I'm going to watch in August. Cause I don't really watch Hard Knocks anymore. Hard Knocks is just not what it used to be. Like, I think the access and then like, I just don't think it's quite as riveting as it was like maybe 5-6 years ago. So maybe I'll just save it for August.
With JJ Watt singing Linkin Park or whatever, flipping tires.
Yeah, Score like minor. The Rex Ryan stuff.
Score minor, yeah, sorry.
Like I'm biased because like the Browns were in it once. Like obviously Bengals were in it once. Like when
the
Ocho
Cinco, were too, and it like, stunk. They split it with the fucking Rams. Yeah. It was awful. What a dumb idea.
Yeah, so we'll see. And like the thing, it's like, yeah, like the idea of the Jets again is intriguing because it's fucking Rogers. Aaron Rodgers. Like, what is Aaron Rodgers gonna realistically give on the show? Nothing.
I think he's gonna do some shit. I think he likes the spotlight.
I think he's gonna retire. I think he retires in the middle of this fucking thing or right before the season. Like, yeah, I actually don't got it. That'll be such an Aaron Rodgers move.
So I'm going to save Quarterback for, I think, August. Like, I need to be in that, like, that football mindset, I think. But I heard it's okay. Heard some people love it.
It's solid.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, the Patrick Mahomes parts, which I watched, were solid. I didn't really watch much of the Kirk Cousins or Mariota parts.
I think that's it. I think that's it on non-Mission Impossible stuff. We were gonna have an interview today, but unfortunately the strike has I won't say who, but
it was Tom Cruise.
That should
be our new thing. We just say like that we were gonna have fucking like I don't know, Chris Pratt today, but we had a writer strike, sorry. Like we just keep going down the line of the biggest actors.
We're gonna do a best movie of all time draft with Tom Cruise, Margot Robbie, and Christopher Nolan. But unfortunately because of the strike, they were not able to make it today.
I saw Palm again this morning. I said, "Great, I loved your character. Thanks for going viral on somebody else's interview."
Yeah, she didn't go viral on another interview. This episode of Lightyear of Barstool is brought to you by Babbel. This episode brought to you by Babbel. That's right. This summer, start speaking a new language. I don't know. Maybe you're going to like. I don't think I can say the name of the event. Maybe you're going to that big event next year in France. And you want to speak French, the big event where all the world's best athletes come together once every 4 years. Maybe you want to speak a different language. You want to travel somewhere. Instead of paying $100 for a private tutor, you know, maybe using those apps. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 150 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Should do this just to watch movies without subtitles in other languages. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. All Babbel's tips and tools for learning a new language are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, delivered with conversation-based teaching. Very convenient, very easy to use. I have a friend that used Babbel that actually moved overseas for a year, said it worked great, made it easy to communicate to everyone. He moved to Japan, said it was fantastic, the best way to do it. I'm like not even kidding. Like, I would really like to just watch movies in other languages and not have to have subtitles on. Studies from Yale, Michigan State University, a lot of Spartans listen to this podcast, and others continue to prove Babbel is better. For instance, one study found Babbel, 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. How about that? With over 10 million subscriptions sold, Babbel is a real language learning for real conversations. So pick up Babbel, B-A-B-B-E-L. Bab, B-A-B-B-E-L. Special, a limited time deal for our listeners too. Get started right now. 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/lights. BABBEL.com/lights. Rules and restrictions may apply. All right. Mission Impossible. Dead Reckoning, Part 1. Interesting box office. Did not meet expectations. Fell a little short of expectations, made like $250 million range. I don't know what the exact thing was. I don't have it up in front of me. But fell a little short. Still is going to make a lot of money. Mission Impossible, which actually I'm going to relate to Oppenheimer in a second. Mission Impossible has an older audience, I know, skew-wise for box office. So it will have good legs. It's not going to like drop off after the weekend. It's gonna last for a while, which is to the point of not as much defending Mission Impossible. It's more of like leads into what I'm about to say about Oppenheimer. I'm very interested to see Oppenheimer and how it opens And if I'm assuming it may fall short of Barbie, and if it does, I think it eventually will catch up to it to an extent, because Oppenheimer is going to have the dedicated audience of Nolan, but Oppenheimer, you want to talk about an older audience, that's going to have legs. Barbie may just see a drop pretty quickly, like big blockbusters do, but I think Oppenheimer is going to be a pretty steady climb, or at least pretty gradual movement, just because of the audience, and people are going to see it after the week's release. So you talk about that Mission Impossible, I think it'd be even stronger with Oppenheimer. Ethan Hunt and the IMF team must track down a terrifying new weapon that threatens all of humanity if it falls into the wrong hands. With control of the future and the fate of the world at stake, a deadly race around the globe begins. Confronted by a mysterious, all-powerful enemy, Ethan is forced to consider that nothing can matter more than the mission, not even the lives of those he cares about most. Ethan Hunt, once again played by Tom Cruise for the seventh time. Rebecca Ferguson back as Ilsa Faust. Simon Pegg is Benji Dunn. Ving Rhames as Luther. You get Henry Zerny back as Kittredge for the first time since the first movies. Yeah, cool to see him in the movie. Reminder, Nicholas Holt was supposed to be in this movie as the villain, and then he was recast. Kind of an interesting little note there. New people in the movie. Vanessa Kirby's back, by the way, as Alana, daughter of Max, who was obviously in the first movie. Rip died. Apparently died around Fallout in Mission Impossible canon. Her brother in it as well. Funny character. New characters, though, the big ones. Pom Klementoff, who we interviewed the other day, plays Paris, a villain, kind of the muscle of Eze Morales' Gabriel, who is someone from the Ethan Hunt's past. And then Hayley Atwell plays a new character named Grace, which won't say much just for spoilers. Off the top, love the movie. Fucking incredible. It's up there with the best of the best of the franchise. I don't think it is the best. I think Fallout is still a decent step up over everything. I love this movie, but Fallout is still number one. I have this very high marks. I think there's one mild complaint. I think it's paced well. I think it fucking rips. I think the timing is awesome. I think there's a little too much exposition-y, explain-y going on in parts where I'm like, maybe scale back on that a little bit. I think like Fallout and even Rogue Nation, they do a good job of not over-explaining things, letting the just what happened speak for itself. And they still do in this movie. But if I'm going to nitpick with a movie and I rate in the 90s, I think maybe the exposition gets to be a little heavy handed at some points where it's like, all right, like back off a little bit. You kind of beat me in the face with it, but I don't think that's going to matter much. And I will say, I do think that's going to set up part two to hit even harder. I have it a 93 out of 100. I think it's fucking amazing. It blew me away. I like left the theater like almost physically shaking just out of like your fucking blood pressure rushing. It's I don't want to spoil anything, but like one of the last scenes, like the last end of that, where he's
amazing.
Whatever. I don't want to spoil it if you haven't seen it yet. It wouldn't stop. You know what I'm talking about? Like the scene would not stop, and you're like, holy fucking shit! Like if you haven't seen it, see the biggest thing possible, the loudest thing possible, man. It rules so hard. And also, last thing, and then Kendra, you go next. Them changing the score of this movie to be just the theme song, redone in various ways, slowed down, sped up, more dramatic, that has just, it's elevated the franchise to just new heights. And that's been since Rogue Nation. So I have a tie to Rogue Nation, 93 out of 100. It lived up to the hype. It's so fucking good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm ending up on a 92 out of 100. I got it, like Fallout, I think, is very pretty much untouchable. It's like it's an impossible standard. And I also want to add the caveat on this that I think I'll probably, like with most part one to part two, I'll probably like this movie more once we have some of the arcs completed in the next movie. But all that said, I think this is one of the coolest movies and the most action-packed movies that I've ever seen that does not really contain a lot of fighting. You know what I mean? Like Fallout was a lot of that. And this one really isn't a ton of that. It's really more less of like a pure action movie and more of like a thriller suspense with like some of the coolest big action stunt set pieces you ever see. And I love that about this. It was a lot more about like the elusive plot elements and like figuring out what's real, what's not real, which felt very throwback to the first movie. And I know Gucci, you said you heard someone say it was like a marriage of Fallout and the first Mission Impossible. I think that's like dead on. It really is just like the combination of those two elements. And I really liked a lot of those return to basics versus like, hey, like with Fallout, again, like big fight scenes, gunfights, like big set, like all that shit's huge. But then in this, it's more like, here's, we want to keep you on the edge of your seat, and we don't want that to be dependent on some big fight sequence. And I love that about this. I think it wraps up about as perfectly as a part one could for a part two. Like we watched, this is like now the third one. And I would say Fast and Furious 10, though maybe the worst, probably well, easily the worst of all the part ones.
God, I forgot.
Where it just stops in the middle of it. Yeah.
Which is not even a part one anymore. It's like it's, yeah. They added more movies.
Yeah. It just stops in the middle of it. And this one, it's like here.
It's a perfect conclusion. Gal Gadot showed up in a submarine. That was the perfect conclusion.
Fucking bozo franchise. Which, by the way, to address Fights tweeting out that he thinks that Mission Impossible is just Fast and Furious. Fuck you.
All I heard with Fights' review of the movie is that he loved it. He said he loved it. That's all I heard. That's all I cared about.
Realistically, that's the best compliment Fights can give any movie.
That's true. Yeah, for the scale of movies, that's a great point. But yeah, so – gosh. But once again, so I think like the big thing is that it wraps up perfectly as its own movie in a part one, and it also keeps you excited for part two. And like while I'm watching, this is like a 2.5 hour movie, and towards the end, like I could sense we're getting towards the end of the movie, and I'm still like, I want to see more. I want this movie to not end. I want to keep going. I could watch another 2.5 hours and conclude this little 2-part arc, which I think is an incredible testament to McQuarrie and his ability to like sort of do that, because that's like an impossible thing. We talked about that with Palm too, where it's like there's scenes where like you can't predict where the connective tissue is going to be between these two movies. So like I think that's super impressive. The new cast members are awesome. I thought Hayley Atwell was like an absolute force in this, like the perfect casting in this. Palm was obviously amazing, and I really like some of the others as well. Henry Zerny being back is great. Cary Elwes is interesting to see in this franchise. And like Mark Gatiss being there for 2 seconds, and as well as some other people in that scene, like Rob Delaney. It's cool. But we'll get more into it in spoilers. But I loved everything about this movie, and I'm very happy that they went back to basics on a bigger scale.
I really like that one, the one character that was in it for 3 minutes with the Dr. Strangelove glasses who dropped the gas. People are losing their minds over that guy, and with good reason. That's one of my biggest takeaways from this movie. I gave it an 82 out of 100, so a little lower than you all. Echoing what you guys think about the action obviously fucking awesome. Without even just fighting, like it just these massive set pieces which look great. Especially this being the first one shot on digital could be a bit of a concern. I don't think you really noticed it at all. I think it looked phenomenal. Especially with those like throwback, which. He said it wasn't a throwback to Mission Impossible 1, those Dutch angle shots, but...
That is the definition of Mission Impossible 1. It's nothing but Dutch angles.
And they used it, like, exactly the same way with the Kittredge scene. Like, it was like... So, that was awesome. I really love the new characters. Hayley Atwell, seeing her in this, you wonder... She's 41 years old now, 40 years old. You wonder how she hasn't been, like, a big star at this point. Like, she is a star in a way, but... Not in a way where she's led her own franchise.
One of those, I saw you reply to one of those big screen leaks tweeted. Tomb they were Raider. Like, implied that she might be Tomb Raider. I don't know if that's what they were saying.
She'd be great Lara Croft.
Yeah. Like she's phenomenal in this. She's so charismatic. She slides right in perfectly. And her dynamic with Tom Cruise was great. I think this was, by the way, the funniest Mission Impossible by far. And not in a way where you would think, they're inserted humor. It's not like cringe. Oh, they're right behind me kind of humor. It's just funny, like stuff that works within the Mission Impossible franchise, like the callback to the magic tricks. Like that's
sleight of hand is so cool.
And it's like you could tell Tom like really wanted to, he probably asked to put that in the movie, like very excited to show off those skills. The driving scene was great, which by the way, Fast X just did a driving scene in Italy, and this one just did it so much better. It was great. I loved Palm's character. Like I said, Paris, like also in our interview, her saying that McHugh gave her the freedom to design that character. Really cool. Cause like the way her costume set up, like she was another callback to Fast X. She was just Joker at points, like just absolute chaos. The biggest problem for me was the villain. I'm just not a fan of AI bad villains. Like it just doesn't always work for me. I hope that there is a further reveal in part two of maybe who created the AI, maybe someone's controlling it, something like that. Because I don't love when it's just a piece of technology. And I do get that there are some, like, I guess they're trying to say, like, it's basically Ethan Hunt versus God here. Like, the entity controls the world. It's everywhere. And it's got this, their main villain is, or his main acolyte is Gabriel, like one of God's soldiers, which is kind of cool. But I'd rather see a person as a villain. And then some of the people they're racing. I didn't really love Asai Morales. He felt very much like a TV villain to me. No offense to him. And then Shea Whigham, I do love him, but he felt a little out of place at points.
Oh, I thought he was
such a classic Mission Impossible foil, yeah. Though.
Yeah, like the perfect like fill-in for the Alec Baldwin in Rogue Nation type of guy. You know what I mean? Which somebody, I think it was Michael Manfax, tweeted that, where it's like, our relationship is over with like the Alec Baldwin quote about Ethan Hunt, where he's like, he's the living manifestation of destiny, to now the quote that Shea Whigham had, where he's like, he's a shape-shifting, chaos-causing son of a gun, or whatever he said.
I did like that funny line.
I see, I don't, so we're into spoilers now, just a heads up. If you haven't seen it, I would stop listening. I get what you're saying about the AI thing, because I think when the movie started too, I was like, because I think we knew, I tried to not know as much about this movie as possible. Like, I watched the trailers, I stopped watching them after a certain point. I was like, oh, this could be stupid. But I do think they used it well. Like, I understand, like, not loving, like, you know, computer bad, AI bad, but
they used it a lot better than 95% of other franchises and other properties that have tried to do the AI bad thing.
And, you know, I think it was a good thing to do, to sort of, a lot of times when that's like AI bad, computer bad, you always fall behind in a way that you can't combat it. Like, I loved Luther doing like all the face changes in the airport. The airport scene was honestly might be my favorites. I love
it was really cool.
That race for the airport. And I loved when you see the Shea Whigham character look, they're like, where is he? And he's running on top of the building. Like, that's just so, and the music it, like, kind of crescendos. So that was cool. But then I love the AI taking over Benji's voice, I thought was great too.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Like, that was cool to kind of change that up. I think I don't want to be big theories guy yet. We'll get to Ilsa at the end. We'll talk about Ilsa Faust and her fate, and if we think Rebecca Ferguson's donezo. Favorite scene though, actually, let's before we do favorite scene, we got to talk about the bike scene, because I feel like the bike scene is the most anticipated scene in the movie. First off, someone in my row, you think I have a bad blood? I actually didn't pee once during the. I was like, I'm not getting up there. I'll piss myself if I have to.
No, he got up during the bike.
Got up multiple times. And then she was standing. I'm on the aisle. I'm always in the aisle next to me. And he's climbing up that mountain. And you know it's about to be this scene. And it's like a 20-minute buildup almost. 20-minute buildup. A 3-year buildup to this fucking bike jump. Or however many years it's been since we first saw it. And I'm like looking out the corner of my eye. I'm like, if this fucking person dares step in front of me when he jumps off this fucking cliff – I don't know, like, they must have known too, because they waited the whole scene. They stood there, like, and they watched the whole scene. I'm like, if this fucking person walks in front of me when he jumps off this cliff. But that scene, I was worried about that scene, because I'm like, man, we've seen it so much. But there's also, I don't know, like, I've never really experienced this with a movie before. And, like, maybe some things, like, I random in my head, obviously always thinking Star Wars, like when Han Solo pops the Millennium Falcon. You're like, in Force Awakens, like, you saw in the trailer, but you're like, come on, here it is. It's about to happen. You know he's about to jump off that cliff, but I think the buildup with it was so great, because it was such a long trek. Yeah. Then she's like, turn here, go here. And the character doesn't know. And, like, it's – look, I'm not, like, crediting the marketing for why the movie worked well, but, like, it was kind of cool that, like, we've seen the jump so many times, but we were still, like – You're still like on the edge of your seat, because you know it's coming, you know it's happening, the build up, and like, it was such a long, cool scene. I thought it was just the bike scene lived up to the hype for me too. And when the sound completely cuts out when he jumps, fucking incredible.
Yeah, that was my favorite. The sound cutting out was amazing.
The conclusion of that too, where he just fucking flies into the train and knocks out two. It was perfect. That's like perfectly Mission Impossible. And I think, speaking of the train, that final sequence with the train cars falling down as they're crawling up through them is one of like the coolest things I've seen in Mission Impossible. Like, and that's where, when I left that movie theater or screening theater, whatever, I was like, they do so well with the set piece shit in this that that bike scene, which is like one of the most anticipated things ever, is like the third coolest set piece thing in the movie, which is crazy to say. But like that scene I thought was so fucking cool. And obviously the fight on top of the train, which was a lot of practical, as we know, was so goddamn cool.
You have to know what you're doing to execute that that train drop thing, because mm-hmm. if that happens in a corny, stupid franchise or a poorly written movie or one that doesn't earn suspense like that, that's a dumb fucking scene. Like that mm-hmm. is just endlessly stupid that they continue to just go car by car. But it, you're sitting there, you're like, what the fuck? And the funny thing is, it's kind of similar to something from Fast and the Furious. I don't know if Fights referenced it, but do you remember when fucking Brian jumps off? He jumps off the truck and lands on the truck in seven. The last one he was in. It goes off the cliff when they're like when they're racing around like the mountain, and he jumps. And like physics wise, he should have never made that jump. Gunther's kind of makes that jump, but like I thought that at the train cars dropping over and over. I mean, I was like, it was intense. Like it just felt fucking intense.
McHugh said there was no inspiration, but it is very much a beat for beat, almost remake of a final scene in Uncharted 2, the video game. Like that exactly.
Somebody said it has a lot of video game. Who was it? It might have been Jeremy John's review I watched said like there's a lot of video game.
Yeah, like that scene in particular was almost a rip, but it's done so well that it doesn't matter, and it hasn't been executed to that extent in live action ever before. So. Mm-hmm. Who gives a fuck? I'd say either that or the car chase in Italy. I really loved it. The car chase was so cool, great.
Man. That's one of the best I've seen in forever.
So good.
I do like that. The Secretary of Intelligence. I forget that I ever seen it twice. Should know was kind of in on being a bag. I like those kind of things. I like that Kittredge was behind a lot of it. Like I think those kind of the really rope-a-doped you a bit as the audience to kind of add multiple villains there. Like nobody's good in this world. Like it's all like that's kind of always the theme. Mission Impossible in the IMF. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned that opening scene, not the opening scene, the scene after the scene after like Ilsa, quote unquote, we think she dies when Ethan Hunt has like the mask on. You're always like, all right, what's going to be the final thing before the opening credits roll and they play the theme? Him putting on the Kittredge mask was awesome. Yeah. I didn't really know where to go. I was like, all right, pretty cool that he face revealed. Like that was neat. I'm like, this was worth it. Lived up to my expectation, but then it exceeded it. Cause when he puts on and then Kittredge is like, of course, that was pretty awesome. That got me.
Yeah. It's a double back on the car chase sequence to see. I think that scene was so perfectly like just indicative of what makes Mission Impossible so great and what made other sort of franchises who did tried similar stuff like the John Wick 4 Arc de Triomphe thing. So cool is like seeing a lot of that shit done and that shit done practically is just so much different and so much more real feeling than seeing it like, you know, CGI car pile up like Fight's favorite franchise. Like it's just really goddamn cool seeing them do all these tricks and knowing that they did them. And that's a big thing about that's great about the Mission Impossible marketing team is that they tell you right off the bat, like, hey, this is real. Because otherwise you might think like there's no way they're doing this in real life. Just in the state of movies, it's going to be CGI. But seeing them do all that shit and it being real was so goddamn cool. And that tiny ass little Fiat just fucking buzzing through Rome, fighting in that tiny little, that little like tunnelway into the rail or subway station. And then like her switching the handcuffs. Like it's just, it was great.
Him walking out with the wheel. Yeah, that is a thing that the franchise does that is so important. And we talked a little bit with Simon Pegg about it. And I love that Simon Pegg mentions like he said, like Benji's not like the comic relief character, but like he did talk about like the humor in that, like there is the humor in this movie and you know, humor comes up. What franchise does humor come up the most with? It's always the MCU. Humor in Mission Impossible always hits pretty damn well. And it's few and far between. It's not every scene,
they
but like
their spots.
Right, they pick their spots. Like it doesn't disrupt the action or the serious moment, but it's like serious long car chase, and it ends with him holding the fucking wheel, and that's how he got out. Like it's a good chuckle, but like it doesn't really stop to like let you laugh. Like you kind of laugh with it as it happens. Music goes, and he's off in the van, and he moves on.
Yeah,
it's I love the second time I saw it too. Like, I think I was like, all right, maybe prisoner of the moment, but then I saw, I was like, nah, everything I felt the first time, I just justified.
That reminds me of the Fallout scene where, like, he's chasing the dude through London, and, like, he's, like, sitting there in the office and talking to Benji, and Benji's like, take a left, and he's like, there's a fucking window, and, like, he's like, well, just, like, work it out, and he, like, steals that lady's chair, and he's like, I'm so sorry, and just busts it down, like, perfectly placed, and does not, like you were saying, like, disrupt the dynamic flow of an action sequence. It's just, like, here's a quick laugh, keep going, and it's, like, it's just built in well, unlike other movies where it's just, like, I think I've used this analogy before, but like if you're on the train, the movie is a train, you need to step, go into full stop so the director can be like, hey, look over there at this attraction. Look at this joke. And then we keep going again. It's like, it just keeps going.
Yeah. Also, now that I think about it, also with the villain, I do want to give it credit, the technology wise. I think it's a really cool move to bring that in, as they had to scale back what they could do with technology here. And bring it back to like spy roots. Like, I think that's setting up for a really interesting part two where they're more analog in how they get things done. Like, that's an interesting direction to take it. So I will give them credit.
The most cliffhangery thing that happened was Luther going off grid. That was the most like, in terms of like, where the fuck is Luther? What was Luther doing? That is the most, well, that's the second biggest question. Even though after I saw it, I didn't even think about the Ilsa. I just assumed she was dead. And the more we've gone, the more I've seen it again, the more we've talked about it, the more people talked about it, the Ilsa thing, which I guess we'll get to now. Do we think Ilsa Faust is dead?
No way, dude.
Trick the entity? Because, right, it was a very it was a really cool scene, by the way. It was like a really dramatic, it gave the movie stakes. And there was a point where I went, what the fuck? She's about to die. I was like, God damn it. I was like, I didn't think they were going to kill her. And then when she dies, you're like, fuck. And it was emotional. Music was perfect there. Him running through the smoke. It was it was awesome. But, you know, I don't know. There wasn't much more after he holds her body. Someone mentioned that Paris gets stabbed and survives kind of the same way, though I think Ilsa caught it a little closer to her, like, top of her chest. But I don't know. Is Ilsa alive? Do they trick the entity? Because remember, they said in that meeting beforehand, they said, like, we can only trust the people in this room. You know, we got to outthink the entity, all that. Like, you got to be a step ahead. So maybe, and she had to die. Someone had to die for the thing to continue on. And obviously, they wanted the entity to play out, or the thing to play out was supposed to play out. That was the whole speech that Luther gave Ethan after she died. So I don't know. Maybe she's alive.
She's kicking, dude.
I don't know.
They had that whole fucking speech about how the entity is predicting this exact like algorithmic path for whatever it happens. So like it's every action it's taking right now, like throughout the rest of the course of that movie, is based on the fact that Ilsa Faust is dead. So she's gonna in the next movie, there's gonna be a sequence where Ethan Hunt's gonna be on the ropes. You know what I mean? Entity's got him down, and then right before like that last blow comes in, it's gonna be like Ilsa Faust, and she's gonna be like, nope. And then it's going to like be, they're going to show you like the reveal of who got a mask on, who did this, who did that. But I think the biggest indicator is the fact that you didn't really see any sort of like, not funeral, but you know what I mean? Like goodbye. It was just like moved straight on. And that was way too fast for a character that spent now three movies with the main crew. You know what I mean? Like you don't just move on like that. You need more time.
I've also seen that as like one of the biggest criticisms of Ethan's actions in the movie is like, how could you save Grace, this woman you've only known for hours over – they didn't save her over it, but how does Grace survive as a new character that's only been on screen for 15 minutes and then Ilsa dies immediately? So I don't think she's dead. Also, next movie, they're obviously going to have to dive down to that submarine at some point. She is the de facto dive person. That's how she was brought in, diving. She's going to be swimming underneath water. Yeah. I'd have a tough
great
time.
Great scene, by the way. That's another one of my favorite scenes in Mission Impossible is that whole dive scene in Rogue Nation.
So good. That's one where you're like looking at your watch. You're like, holy shit.
There's a little bar going down to zero on the oxygen. Like, oh.
It's also something that Mission Impossible really hasn't done yet, where they just bring someone back from the dead or, you know, like that. They have held off on doing that so far. So, God. And I need more Ving in the next one. I will say I did miss him in the back half.
I think they are setting up. It clearly sets up a pretty big something with Ving and like what they're doing differently. So
he's gonna be sitting in that chair with his hat.
I did like how they went back to calling him, what was it, like the net freak or whatever, whatever it was they called him in the first movie. Mm-hmm. Like his moniker, I forget what it was, but it was cool hearing that.
Ethan, the entity is scared of you. I can't do the Ving's voice.
Yeah, that's no shit.
It's so deep. It's one of the best voices out there.
Great voice.
We have the meats.
You ever see the behind the scenes of the guys doing the baby back ribs commercial?
Yeah, very cool. I have.
Yeah, it's
very cool.
Of course.
Who hasn't? Come on.
Do we also think, like, is there any? We saw the AI entity with the submarine in the beginning. Do we think that was maybe, is there anything with that? Because we see the submarine at the end. Was that maybe anything out of order? Was that maybe not linear? I don't know. Like, was there anything that we got tricked there? I was trying to think of just things that we might see that sort of, because obviously the whole movie is deception. Like, everything about the movie is deception and maybe not believing what you see. Like, I am curious if there's anything else that we saw that maybe was a trick. I don't know. And this is me. I don't have anything in front of me that says like this is that. I'm just kind of curious. Like,
it's the best part about the movies, man. It's all deception and illusion. And I think that's the bigger emphasis on that in this movie is what I really loved about it.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. Part two is due to come out next year, right?
Yep.
Yeah, June. Well, we'll see now.
Yeah, how much do
that would suck ass?
Yeah,
things are going to get delayed. So,
because Zaslav needs fucking $500 million, that fucking pig, that fucking bozo pig.
But they did film this already, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's coming out next year. It has to, unless they have like reshoots and stuff they have to do. But I don't know.
Okay. Well, hopefully this isn't impacted too hard because this is I really, really need to see this. Then hopefully this movie makes enough money. I don't know. I think they're fine. I can't imagine the marketing budget was 2x the production budget here.
Mm-hmm. Like, no NFTs involved too, which is helpful.
I'd buy an NFT. I'd buy a Mission Impossible NFT. I'd figure it out.
So yeah, we all liked it quite a bit. Awesome movie, just fucking incredible. Next week, pretty obvious one: Barbie and Oppenheimer.
And share
next week on the podcast. Yeah. And then after that, what comes out after that? I guess the Haunted Mansion. I can't believe
we got the invite for that for the screener the other day. And I was like, nope. I'll be seeing that with everyone else.
The Beanie Bubble also coming out this week on Apple TV Plus, which I still don't understand that movie because like they call him the actual Ty Warner. Like the guy who made Beanie Babies, but then they don't show Beanie Babies in the movie.
Yeah, I think
I must be missing. There's got to be. I guess maybe they can't show without rights, but they can use his name. I don't fucking know.
We gotta do. Why don't we do They Clone Tyrone? That comes out on Netflix.
Could do that, yeah.
Well, we'll also we'll talk that movie, but obviously, I mean, got the big boys coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
next week. So make sure to go see it. Both those movies, Barbie and Oppenheimer, we will talk about them next week. I'm excited. I can't wait. It's back-to-back weekends. I mean, talk about two better weekends in terms of big, massive releases. Very pumped. That's it. For Ken, Jack, and Gooch, I'm Jeff DeLo. We'll talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.
You should be. Meet the new Lucky One sweet tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
It's Fran from Chicks in the Office. It's peak summer. One plan is turning into five, but trust, I'll be wearing Abercrombie to all of them. Catch me in their Sloan tailored pant at work and then the happy hour right after. The Dylan dress for dinner plans when you want something easy but still put together. And of course, their denim. Because Abercrombie denim just works, no matter the plan. Keep up with the pace of summer without overthinking it. Shop in the app, online, and in stores.